Hello and welcome to Sound Body, a weekly program of information on health topics and ideas that can help you live life to its fullest. I'm Louise Craig. All too often, doctors see only the size of their patients. After all, stepping on the scale is one of the first things we do at the doctor's office. This means that instead of listening to their larger patients, they attribute medical problems to weight, when something else might be going on. This kind of misdiagnosis can be catastrophic, but so is the shaming that sometimes keeps fat patients from going to the doctor at all. Today, we have three articles about the kinds of problems that arise when doctors practice weight discrimination instead of medicine. We'll start with one from STAT, and this was written by Laura Fraser and published on August 15, 2017, titled, "My sister's cancer might have been diagnosed sooner if doctors could have seen beyond her weight." My older sister Jan visited me in San Francisco last spring. "You look great," I told her, noticing that her clothes were hanging loose. She'd been heavy most of her life. "I've lost 60 pounds," she said, and I automatically congratulated her. "I wasn't trying," she replied. It hit me then that something was very wrong, first with her health, but also with the way I assumed that her weight loss was a sign of well-being. My own judgments and shame associated with being fat got in the way of seeing my sister. Looking closer, her face seemed strained, and despite the constant smile she turned on, she wasn't well. She told me that she'd been in so much pain that she'd had little appetite for months. I asked Jan if she'd seen a doctor. She had, but it hadn't gone well. The doctor she'd known for years had converted his practice into a concierge service, and she hadn't wanted to pay the extra $15,000 to stay with him. So she'd made an appointment with an OBGYN a friend had recommended. Jan's eyes welled up as she described the visit. She had run down her symptoms, vaginal bleeding, unexplained weight loss, and near-constant pelvic pain. She told me the doctor hadn't taken her complaints seriously, dismissing her concerns and performing a routine examination. "He didn't do anything for me, and he didn't find anything. He just saw me as a fat, complaining older woman," Jan said. Demeaned and discouraged, she didn't seek a second opinion right away. Instead, she explored possible causes of her abdominal pain, wasting months avoiding dairy and gluten and taking over-the-counter pain medications. Jan's experience as a fat, 59-year-old woman is hardly unique. Several studies have shown that many physicians consider the time spent with obese patients a waste, and they don't hesitate to broadcast their biases in the examining room. Fat people are less likely to seek medical treatment because they know the stigma and lectures that await them. My oldest sister, Cynthia, who is also heavy, recently visited a doctor for a rheumatologic problem and was curtly told to lay off the hamburgers and Cokes, even though she never touches fast food. On her next visit, she brought along her slim and athletic husband and says she got better care by association. Weight has long been part of our family drama. My sisters and I weren't as trim and fit as our parents, who focused on thinness as the barometer of our worth. Our father is a pediatrician, and perhaps the sense of failure that many doctors feel when they see their fat patients in the office greeted him every evening when he came home to his kids. Our parents believed that making comments about our weight and putting us on diets would help, just the opposite of what the American Academy of Pediatrics today considers better wisdom for preventing obesity and eating disorders. Criticizing us for being fat instead of encouraging us to be athletic became a self-fulfilling prophecy. Jan, who'd been strong, bright, and athletically gifted as a child, the fastest skier and the best at team sports, became the heaviest of us four sisters. During our visit in San Francisco, I encouraged Jan to see another doctor to get to the bottom of what was ailing her. A few months later, she finally got an appointment at an internist's office, A physician assistant examined her. Jan arrived at the visit weak and racked with pain. She came out of it in tears, with no answers and no relief. "She wouldn't give me anything because she thought I was just trying to get an opioid fix," she told Cynthia, who had accompanied her. Did the physician assistant think Jan was putting on an act to catch drugs because she was fat, that despite her detailed and articulate medical complaints, not to mention her obvious and tremendous pain, she fit some undisciplined drug-seeking profile? The physician assistant did, at least, send Jan to have some blood tests. When she had finished giving blood, she was so exhausted she couldn't drive herself home. Very early the next morning, Jan got a call from the internist, who, even though he had never met her, told her to go immediately to the emergency room. She was quickly admitted to the intensive care unit in critical condition, with a sky-high level of calcium in her blood. An MRI revealed an enormous mass in her abdomen. When Jan was stable enough for surgery, the hospital's gynecologic oncologist removed the largest endometrial tumor he said he'd ever seen, the size of a volleyball. It had peppered her pelvis with cancer, infiltrating her bladder and other organs. The MRI also showed spots on Jan's lungs, likely signs that the disease was spreading even further. In hindsight, endometrial cancer is an easy disease to Google. The first few hits reveal the signs and symptoms: unexplained weight loss, vaginal bleeding after menopause, pelvic pain. Jan had them all. I'm no doctor, and I know that physicians are not infallible, but it strikes me that those symptoms, the ones the patient came in worried about, should have raised red flags far more than the fact that she was overweight. Jan went through a few rounds of chemotherapy and lost even more weight. She took some perverse pleasure at being able to fit into normal sizes and fashionable clothes for the first time in her life, not the unsophisticated, uninspired garments that most manufacturers muster up for plus-sized women. By then, she'd lost about 100 pounds, and despite her conspicuous illness, the wig, the pallor, the fear in her eyes, people kept on complimenting her about her weight loss. They, too, saw only her size. Jan died last Christmas Eve, 6 months after learning she had cancer. Hers was an unusually aggressive type of endometrial cancer. Maybe she would have died just as quickly if she'd been thin. But I can't help thinking that Jan might have had a better chance if her doctors had looked beyond her weight and their prejudices about fat, middle-aged women. If she hadn't been so reluctant to seek medical treatment because of the fat-shaming lectures she knew awaited her, and if she'd grown up thinking that her body was okay the way it was, and she should love it, move it, and take care of it. Now, Laura Fraser, the author of that, is a journalist and author of several books, including Losing It, America's Obsession with Weight and the Industry that Feeds on It. We will go to an article from the New York Times written by Gina Colata. This was published on September 25th, 2016, titled, Why Do Obese Patients Get Worse Care? Many Doctors Don't See Past the Fat. And I will say that this and the last article are from 2015 and 2016. There is not an awful lot written, reported on this subject. You must lose weight, a doctor told Sarah Bramblett, advising a 1,200 calorie a day diet. But Ms. Bramblett had a basic question. How much do I weigh? The doctor's scale went up to 350 pounds, and she was heavier than that. If she did not know the number, how would she know if the diet was working? The doctor had no answer, so Ms. Bramblett, 39, who lived in Ohio at the time, resorted to a solution that made her burn with shame. She drove to a nearby junkyard that had a scale that could weigh her. She was 502 pounds. One in three Americans is obese, a rate that has been steadily growing for more than two decades, but the healthcare system, in its attitudes, equipment, and common practices, is ill-prepared, and its practitioners are often unwilling to treat the rising population of fat patients. The difficulties range from scales and scanners, like MRI machines, that are not built big enough for very heavy people, to surgeons who categorically refuse to give knee or hip replacements to the obese, to drug doses that have not been calibrated for obese patients. The situation is particularly thorny for the more than 15 million Americans who have extreme obesity, a body mass index of 40 or higher, and face a wide range of health concerns. Part of the problem, both patients and doctors say, is a reluctance to look beyond a fat person's weight. Patty Neese, 58, of Alexandria, Virginia, went to an orthopedist because her hip was aching. She had lost nearly 70 pounds, and although she still had a way to go, was feeling good about herself, until she saw the doctor. "He came to the door of the exam room, and I started to tell him my symptoms," Ms. Neese said. He said, "Let me cut to the chase. You need to lose weight." The doctor, she said, never examined her, but he made a diagnosis, obesity pain, and relayed it to her internist. In fact, she learned later she had progressive scoliosis, a condition not caused by obesity. Dr. Louis J. Arone, an obesity specialist at Weill Cornell Medicine, helped found the American Board of Obesity Medicine to address this sort of issue. The goal is to help doctors learn how to treat obesity and serve as a resource for patients seeking doctors who can look past their weight when they have a medical problem. Dr. Arone says patients recount stories like Ms. Neese's to him all the time. "Our patients say, nobody has ever treated me like I have a serious problem. They blow it off and tell me to go to Weight Watchers," Dr. Arone said. "Physicians need better education, and they need a different attitude toward people who have obesity," he said. "They need to recognize that this is a disease like diabetes or any other disease they are treating people for. The issues facing obese people follow them through the medical system, starting with the physical exam. Research has shown that doctors may spend less time with obese patients and fail to refer them for diagnostic tests. One study asked 122 primary care doctors affiliated with one of three hospitals within the Texas Medical Center in Houston about their attitudes toward obese patients. The doctors reported that seeing patients was a greater waste of their time the heavier that they were, that physicians would like their jobs less as their patients increased in size, that heavier patients were viewed to be more annoying, and that physicians felt less patients the heavier the patient was, the researchers wrote. Other times, doctors may be unwittingly influenced by unfounded assumptions, attributing symptoms like shortness of breath to the person's weight without investigating other likely causes. That happened to a patient who eventually went to see Dr. Scott Cahan, an obesity specialist at Georgetown University. The patient, a 46-year-old woman, suddenly found it almost impossible to walk from her bedroom to her kitchen. Those few steps left her gasping for breath. Frightened, she went to a local urgent care center where the doctor said she had a lot of weight pressing on her lungs. The only thing wrong with her, the doctor said, was that she was fat. "I started to cry," said the woman who asked not to be named to protect her privacy. "I said, I don't have a sudden weight pressing on my lungs. I'm really scared. I'm not able to breathe." "That's the problem with obesity," she said, the doctor told her. "Have you ever considered going on a diet?" It turned out that the woman had several small blood clots in her lungs, a life-threatening condition, Dr. Cahan said. For many, the next step in a diagnosis involves a scan, like a CT or MRI. But many extremely heavy people cannot fit in the scanners, which, depending on the model, typically have weight limits of 350 to 450 pounds. Scanners that can handle very heavy people are manufactured, but one national survey found that at least 90% of emergency rooms did not have them. Even 4 in 5 community hospitals that were deemed bariatric surgery centers of excellence lacked scanners that could handle very heavy people. Yet CT or MRI imaging is needed to evaluate patients with a variety of ailments, including trauma, acute abdominal pain, lung blood clots, and strokes. When an obese patient cannot fit in a scanner, doctors may just give up. Some use x-rays to scan, hoping for the best. Others resort to more extreme measures. Dr. Kahn said another doctor had sent one of his patients to a zoo for a scan. She was so humiliated that she declined requests for an interview. Problems do not end with a diagnosis. With treatments, uncertainties continue to abound. In cancer, for example, obese patients tend to have worse outcomes and a higher risk of death, a difference that holds for every type of cancer. The disease of obesity might exacerbate cancer, said Dr. Clifford Huddas, the chief executive officer of the American Society of Clinical Oncology. But, he added, another reason for poor outcomes in obese cancer patients is almost certainly that medical care is compromised. Drug doses are usually based on standard body sizes or surface areas. The definition of a standard size, Dr. Huddas said, is often based on data involving people from decades ago when the average person was thinner. For fat people, that might lead to underdosing for some drugs, but it's hard to know without studying specific drug effects in heavier people, and such studies are generally not done. Without that data, if someone does not respond to a cancer drug, it is impossible to know whether the dose was wrong or the patient's tumor was just resisting the drug. One of the most frequent medical problems in obese patients is arthritis of the hip or knee. It is so common, in fact, that most patients arriving at orthopedist's office in agonizing pain from hip or knee arthritis are obese. But many orthopedists will not offer surgery unless the patients first lose weight, said Dr. Adolph J. Yates, Jr., an orthopedics professor at the University of Pittsburgh School of Medicine. There are offices that will screen by phone, Dr. Yates said. They will ask for weight and height and tell patients before they see them that they can't help them. But how well grounded are those weight limits? There's a perception among some surgeons that it is more difficult, and certainly some felt that it was an added risk to operate on very obese people, Dr. Yates said. He was a member of a committee that reviewed the risks and benefits of joint replacement in obese patients for the American Association of Hip and Knee Surgeons. The group concluded that heavy patients should first be counseled to lose weight because a lower weight reduces stress on the joints and can alleviate pain without surgery. But there should not be blanket refusals to operate on fat people, the committee wrote. Those with a body mass index over 40, like a 5-foot-inch woman weighing 250 pounds or a 6-foot man weighing 300, and who cannot lose weight, should be informed that their risks are greater, but they should not be categorically dismissed, the group concluded. Yet Dr. Yates said he had successfully operated on people with body mass indexes as high as 45. What is behind the refusals to operate, he said, is that doctors and hospitals have become risk-averse because they fear their ratings will fall if too many patients have complications. A lower score can mean reductions in reimbursements by Medicare. Poor results can also lead to penalties for hospitals and eventually doctors. A recent survey of more than 700 hip and knee surgeons confirmed Dr. Yates' impressions. 62% said they used body mass index scores as cutoffs for requiring weight loss before offering surgery, but there was no consistency in the figures they picked. The numbers were all over the map, Dr. Yates said, and 42% who picked a body mass index cutoff said they'd done so because they were worried about their performance score or that of their hospital. It's very common to pick an arbitrary BMI number and say, that is the number we won't go above, Dr. Yates said. Yet a person with an index of, say, 41 might be healthy and active, he said, but in terrible pain from arthritis. A knee replacement could be life-transforming. It's a zero-sum game with everyone trying to have the lowest-risk patient, Dr. Yates said. Patients who may be at a marginally higher risk may be treated as a class instead of individuals. That is the definition of discrimination. Surgery involves anesthesia, of course, giving rise to another issue. There are no requirements for drug makers to figure out appropriate doses for obese patients. Only a few medical experts, like Dr. Hendrikus Lemmens, a professor of anesthesiology at Stanford University, have tried to provide answers. His group looked at several drugs, propofol, which puts people to sleep before they get general anesthesia, succinylcholine, used to relax muscles in the windpipe when a breathing tube must be inserted, and anesthetic gases. Propofol doses, Dr. Lemmens found, should be based on lean body weight, the weight of the body minus its fat. Using total body weight, as is routine for normal weight people, would result in an overdose for obese patients, he said. But succinylcholine doses should be based on total body weight, he determined, and the dosing of anesthetic gases is not significantly affected by obesity. As for regional anesthetics, he said, there are very few data, but they probably should be dosed according to lean body weight. Bad outcomes because of inappropriate dosing do occur, said Dr. Lemmens, who added that 20-30% of all obese patients in intensive care after surgery were there because of anesthetic complications. Given the uncertainties about anesthetic doses for the obese, Dr. Lemmens said, he suspects that a significant number of them had inappropriate dosing. Yet for many fat people, the questions about appropriate medical care are beside the point because they stay away from doctors. I've avoided going to a doctor at all, said Sarai Walker, the author of Dietland, a novel. That is very common with fat people. No matter what the problem is, the doctor will blame it on fat and will tell you to lose weight. Do you think I don't know I am fat? She added. And lastly, we have an article that comes from the Research News from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, and this was published on August 3rd, 2015. And I have had to edit this a little bit to fit time, and I hope we get it in. You could walk in with an axe sticking out of your head, and they would tell you your head hurt because you're fat. Healthcare policy advocate Ted Kyle, who blogs at ConscienHealth.org, cites this remark, posted as a comment to a New York Times story, as emblematic of the feelings of many overweight people. Kyle says many such patients feel judged by their physicians. They believe their doctors see them as lazy, undisciplined, and totally responsible for their own weight gain. All other health issues become somehow tied to their extra weight. One unfortunate result of this dynamic is that if these patients fail to shed pounds per the doctor's expectations and admonitions, they may just stay home when it's time for the next checkup rather than deal with the feelings of shame. What does it mean to be an overweight or obese patient in today's healthcare system, and what does the future hold in terms of doctors' attitudes toward obesity? Considering that a majority of Americans are overweight, these questions have gotten surprisingly little attention in the medical literature, says obesity stigma expert Dr. Sean Phelan. The whole area of weight bias has been understudied. Compared to other characteristics that are stigmatized and that may lead to health disparities, there's been so little research in this area. One reason for the gap, says Phelan, is that obesity bias isn't thought of the same way as our other types of bias. It's unique in that it's so openly stigmatized, says Phelan. When it comes to, say, racial bias, that tends to be unconscious. People are often not aware that they're showing a racial bias or that certain attitudes might be influencing what they do, and they don't feel good about it if they become aware of their bias. But with obesity, it's often very explicit. Providers can be open about the fact that they dislike providing care for obese patients. Phelan adds, there's a sort of instant emotional reaction. There can be a disgust reaction that you don't get with other types of bias. It has mainly to do with what researchers call attribution theory, says Phelan. If you're seen as responsible for bringing it on yourself, the public reaction can be stronger. Obesity is seen as a controllable issue, the result of low willpower, weakness. It can easily be blamed on the person. In truth, obesity has many drivers, including genetics. It's multifactorial, far more than just the choice to eat junk food or too much food. But it's not uncommon to find doctors who insist otherwise and who make no secret of their views to their overweight patients. Phelan says he's heard these type of comments far too often. I've talked with colleagues who have the attitude, well, maybe that's just what obese patients need to hear to turn their lives around. Researchers have mixed views on the American Medical Association's 2013 decision that obesity should be considered a disease in its own right. Phelan, for some people it was a win because it meant potentially more resources would be available for treating obesity, and to the extent it can shift providers' attitudes away from blaming people toward recognizing that it's a condition caused by many factors, including underlying physiological factors, that it's not something you did to yourself because you're lazy, that can be positive. On the downside, he says, if we take the approach of the health at every size movement, we would say that obesity is part of the diversity of humans here on Earth, and it's no more a disease than someone's race or gender. Burgess agrees that if the disease categorization can help shift people's attention toward some of the less talked about determinants of obesity, such as lack of access to healthy food, then it's a good thing. If you're stuck on the individual blame piece, she says, you're not looking at the social factors and the policy changes that would address those factors. Meanwhile, though, the blame and shame factor is a real and present danger, emotionally speaking, for obese patients, and that can translate into worse health outcomes. There are a few studies that have found that people delay certain cancer screenings because they're embarrassed about their size, notes Phelan. And in one study, the main reason obese women gave for not following up with their providers was that they were embarrassed that they hadn't lost weight when they'd been told to. And Phelan acknowledges that doctors can't get around talking to patients about their weight, nor is he advocating that they try it. What he does push for is a less judgmental, more affirming way of doing it, one that doesn't hurt doctor-patient rapport. One of our standards of quality care is to address weight. We can't avoid it. But we can try to make it clear that the relationship is not contingent on this. He advises providers, make it about feeling good, not about the number on the scale. Nuances in how doctors communicate their advice make a huge difference. And that is where we need to leave it today. And I hope those were some interesting readings. And I thank you for tuning in to Sound Body. Stay well. And please come back next week for more healthy living ideas. This has been Sound Body, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. I'm Louise Craig. And I hope you'll join me again next week for more health updates and information for healthy living. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can download a podcast of the show at our website, wxxi.org.